Tonight we heard of some very, very sad news. Earlier I announced the fact that we heard this evening of the passing of Dr. Sam Motsuenyane, the founder of African Bank. Just a sad, sad moment for South African black business, frankly. And very, very sad indeed. But look, he had a great innings. I'm not really sure how old he was when he passed. He was a man of advanced age, but deeply, deeply respected in the business fraternity in South Africa. A real pioneer. I mean, he's right up there with the Ntate Maponya and Ntate Habakuk. How much was he?
97.
97 years old was Ntate Sam Motsuenyane. May his soul rest in peace and we commiserate with his family. But we also heard some very tragic news later on of the passing of Dingane, the Rose of Soweto, Thobela. Man who held, I think, two world championships at one stage of his life, was the consummate boxer, consummate fighter. I think he's right up there just in terms of skill with some of the top guys ever, right? And we heard today of his passing. I want to tell you that I interviewed him. I had a conversation with him in our profile interview on the 29th of April, 2022.
Yes.
Interesting that today is the 29th of April, 2024. So 2 years exactly to the day, I had a conversation with Dingane Thobela. And I want you to hear just a little bit of what we had to talk about, him and I. And then I'm going to have my good friend Peter Leoping, boxing aficionado and analyst, who's never gotten it wrong, not once, when he calls a particular fight. And we're going to have a conversation about the life and times of Dingane Thobela straight after this.
Profile interview.
Well, he joins me now on the line. He is former two-time light world champion, world champion, former super middleweight champion. And he has agreed to talk to little old me. His name is Dingane, the Rose of Soweto, Thobela, and he joins me now on the line. But Dingane, thank you so much, my brother, for agreeing to talk to me. It is, I suppose, one of my big ham highlights.
Oh, wow. No, I'm Clinton. Thank you very much.
Are you well?
Very well, thanks. And how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I had the privilege last week of being in conversation with Peter Leoping. You know Peter Leoping, he's a commentator, extraordinary about boxing in this country. And we started reminiscing and we started talking and your name came up in the great hall of fame of pugilists, people that have shown us the way as far as boxing is concerned. And I said to my producer, you need to find that man. And they've come through, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us, Pratin, and I really, really appreciate it. I want to start off by saying thank you, for what you've meant to the sport, for those of us who've been part of the sport, who know the sport, who know the discipline. You have been an absolute light. Do you miss boxing?
Oh, yeah, I know. I do miss boxing. I love boxing. And boxing has helped me to be what I am. I'm glad, though, that I am still part of boxing somehow.
And how are you still part of boxing at this point?
Well, I manage fighters. You know, I promoted at some stage, which I'm still looking up to, having to get to, put my guys in order where I can still be given the chance to still promote boxing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Your earliest memories of coming into contact with the sport, whether it was just watching or the first time you put on a pair of gloves, when was that, Dingane?
Yeah, well, those were in the dusty street of Soweto, years back. I think in 19, when I started having to fight back in retaliation of, abuse and being bullied by some of the, elder, guys and I had to, you know, defend myself. I think, you know, it all started in the early 80s onward, you know, then, but 82, 83, then I started heading to head to a boxing gym of some sort.
And was it under the training or tutelage of a specific person? How did it actually start? I mean, what did you go to a gym and simply say, listen, I want to start training? Or was it just a matter of it happening organically? Give me the history.
Yeah, well, having to defend myself, and of course, it sounded like I am bullying the other guys because I was beating them up, you know.
Yeah.
So then it was much easier for me to get into a boxing gym. Why? Because when the reports come, you know, from other, you know, parents saying I'm fighting with their kids and all that, and my dad got to, you know, hear that. And, you know, he had to, you know, give me some lashes, you know, why you doing that and all that. And I had to reply by saying, you know, it was a form of defense in some sort. And but I think that got into me, and I thought, wow, you know, why can't I look out for a gym and start training, you know, and becoming a boxer?
South Africa had some excellent boxing capitals, no doubt. Soweto, in Witbank was also a place that produced some great boxers. Mamelodi, and I'll tell you about Mamelodi and you don't know, but
I kind of wait to hear that.
Well, let me give you a clue. You decommissioned the boxer back in 1987, on the 8th of March. Does your mind take you back?
1987.
Yeah, it was at the Tamil Hall in Lodium, Pretoria.
Oh, yes, Masangu.
Ah!
Yes, I remember Masangu. You know?
That's my father. That was my my uncle. It was my uncle, George Masangu. You decommissioned him. That was his last fight. You know that? It was his last professional fight. Yeah, so that was my conversation with Dingaan the Rose of Soweto, Tobela. And I'm joined now by Peter Liuping, a boxing analyst and aficionado, to tell us a little bit more about the life and times of this great boxing legend. But Peter, thank you so much for joining me this evening. And what a tragic story. What a sad, sad piece of news coming through from Johannesburg of the passing of the great Dingaan the Rose of Soweto Tobela.
Yeah, props. Good evening. Earlier you spoke about that day, Sam Motsuenyane.
Yeah.
Yeah, 97. Dingaan was only 57 when he passed on. And the sad thing is that, you know, he died a very, very lonely life. No one knows when he died, perhaps. He was staying by himself in a flat in Mayfair. And the past few days, people were trying to get hold of him, including myself at some stage, phoning, and then he was not answering his phones, but we just didn't really think much about it. But his family got worried when they couldn't get a hold of him. They got the police, and they had to go and break into his flat, and found his body. It was found literally some few hours ago, you know, early this evening.
Is there any sense of the cause of death, Peter?
No, we don't know yet. We don't know yet. And earlier on, also, I was speaking to his trainer, one of his trainers, Elias Shawalala. And all of us, we, you know, the guys, people who were close to him, we suspected that he must have been suffering from something. He didn't just look good in the past few years. But unfortunately,
when you say suffering an illness?
Illness, yes. Right, yeah. He could not disclose. He didn't tell anybody. He didn't talk to anybody. We saw that, but we thought maybe it was just a stress of losing his businesses. Because remember, he was a businessman.
Yeah.
he had a funeral parlor.
Yeah.
And we used to joke about it. You know, I would say, "Hey, Dingaan, hey, how's business?" He says, "Peter, business is dead." You know, referring to his funeral business. So yeah, and he owed the tax man a lot of money, and his marriage broke down. So yeah, there were a lot of things really happening in his life, and we thought that maybe that was the reason. But he didn't actually look good, and then this happens. It's very, very tragic.
It's very tragic, Rapida. You know, I had the conversation that you just listened to with him exactly 2 years ago. It was the 29th of April, 2022.
Wow.
That conversation. So it's exactly 2 years ago to the date that him and I had that conversation about his life and times. It was a profile interview. And I reminded him of the fight he had with my uncle, George Masango.
Yes.
And the fact that he decommissioned my uncle, but he was significantly older at the time. Bra George died 2 years ago also.
Oh,
yeah. Following a stroke, right? But the same can be said of Bra George, that he didn't talk too much about some of the difficulties that he was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether it has something to do with the fact that these guys were, you know, strong men. They were proficient in the art of the fists, and perhaps didn't know how to be vulnerable sometimes in order for them to access assistance sometimes from other places. Do you sometimes think about that?
Yes.
As you think about this.
I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
These guys are gladiators.
Yeah.
You know, they
warriors.
Warriors. Yes. Yeah. That's tough image. Macho image.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult for them now. You know to look vulnerable,
yeah,
and to admit to defeat and say, look,
yeah,
I'm not myself. I'm suffering. I've got this a problem. It's not in their nature. That's not how they are. And probably
because they're trained to fight through the pain, right? So they're trained to ignore the pain and keep fighting through. And sometimes they fight with pains that they shouldn't ignore.
Yes, 100%. You're right. And because, you know, one of the biggest things in boxing is to quit. You know, they're not quitters.
Yep.
They fight through, even if, as you say, that undergoing pain and it's difficult. And I've known boxers who have fought with broken bones.
Mm.
You know, one boxer, a South African boxer, his shoulder actually dislocated.
Yeah.
You could see the shoulder was really out of place.
Yeah.
But he continued fighting.
Yeah.
That's how boxers are.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably Dingaan was had some kind of ailment. He was suffering from something. But as I said, we just thought that, look, it's just all these things coming back at him. The issue of money.
And another thing, Rapida, that I noticed, at least from with regards to my uncle as well, how at the moment of weakness they tend to retreat. Sort of they tend to retreat and not want to be seen and not want to interact with people. I imagine also as part of that, of that discomfort with dealing with weakness at certain points. I mean, I remember that my uncle also disappeared. People didn't know where he was. But think that is commentary to how we keep close to them.
Yes, that's part of
their... Yep, go ahead.
No, so saying, that's part of their defense mechanism. You know, they close up and you can't really get through to them.
Mm.
And also the analogies that night, also in the ring, you know, when you corner them and then they're in the corner, you're hitting them. You know, they cover themselves and they don't let punches come through. Mm. And yeah, maybe that's, as we said, that's how they are wired up at these boxers, especially champion boxers like Dina Ntobela. You know, he's always been a hero. He's always been up there. Yeah. And he was not going to allow himself really to look weak, but
tried to be exemplary, especially to younger guys. I had the privilege of training with them 1 year here in Bramfontein. There was a boxing gym here in Bramfontein many years ago, and I was still fighting back in those days. And had a chance to just train. You know the moment when boxers get together and train, it becomes almost like a religious, almost a spiritual sort of moment when guys are in that zone. You know, I remember him. He was always trying to pep up the young guys. I remember saying, "Hey, Masango, push, man, push," and always really trying to make sure that he presents himself as a good role model for the younger guys. Really trying. And after the training session, we'd come together and there'd be somebody who would offer a prayer, you know, and we'd all hold hands and we'd pray and so forth. And he, I remember him saying, don't take this lightly, guys. Don't take this lightly, you know. He wasn't a very religious guy. But I remember he would say to us, guys, don't take this lightly. Don't take this lightly. He had an illustrious boxing career, Rapida. I mean, guy was a world champion twice. We all wish we had seen the fight between him and Brian Mitchell. That's the name. Yeah. That never took place. That would have been an epic fight. But I mean, he has fought the best in the world, came back and came back again. An illustrious boxing career. Talk to us about that.
Yes, you're right. Dina Ntobela came up. He was about five years younger than Brian Mitchell.
Yep.
So when Brian Mitchell was a world champion, he was only South African champion and trying to come up. And then, yes. Let's be honest about it. It was during the
days of apartheid, for sure.
And we were looking at boxing in terms of black and white.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So for us, it was like, yes, here's a young black guy now. He can go and beat up the white Brian Mitchell.
Yeah.
Brian Mitchell never really agreed to that fight. He said, mm-hmm. "Look, he's a world champion. He's not going to be fighting South African champions," but we all believe that no, he could have beaten Brian Mitchell.
Yeah.
And I had an opportunity to be friends with both of them, to work with them. Brian Mitchell right now, I'm working with him. In terms of commentary when we're doing a boxing, and yeah, I spoke to Brian Mitchell and interviewed him also, and Brian Mitchell confessed to me, told me, and said, "Peter, you know, this guy, Dina Ntobela, he's hard." Because of the time, in fact, the way it happened, yeah, we all were looking forward to Brian Mitchell fighting Dina Ntobela someday. And it didn't happen. And then it happened that, okay, fine, there was a press conference, we called in, and we were told that Brian Mitchell was going to train Dina Ntobela.
Yeah.
So I reported on 702, and then I played around with words there. I said, "Finally, Brian Mitchell and Dina Ntobela are going to meet."
No. And by the way, you're right about the legend of the punching power of the rules. I mean, my uncle used to speak about the same thing as well. He would speak about the fact that he had a very unique way of pivoting. Very unique way. I mean, he was right up there with guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, Muhammad Ali. And I remember Welcome Nita also had a similar pivoting. So, you know, like the ability to punch going back. You know what I mean? He had this amazing, I mean, very few boxers have that ability to punch hard while going back. And that requires all sorts of skill, right?
Yes, but now listen to this one now. Yep. Right from the mouth of Brian Mitchell.
Yep.
So what happened was, okay, Brian Mitchell trained Dingaan Thobela. They had a fight overseas, yep, at some stage, and they couldn't get sparring partners. So Brian Mitchell was forced as a trainer now to spar.
Really,
Dingaan Thobela, yes. And he told me, Brian Mitchell, with his own mouth, man, and said, "Peter, I can tell you something. Dingaan Thobela hit hard."
Yeah.
He said, I'm glad I did not fight him in the ring because this guy hits hard." And listen to this also. Brian Mitchell says, "Look, I was good." That is Brian Mitchell. He says, "I was good because I had to train very, very hard.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a naturally talented boxer, but I worked hard.
Yeah.
And that's how I achieved what I achieved."
Yeah.
He said, "But Dingaan Thobela, naturally talented.
Absolutely.
You know, he was a talented.
Absolutely.
Everything that came naturally to him, and he was a pure boxer." He says, yep, "Now in boxing skills, this guy was
absolutely. He was definitely not a brawler, right? He was, yes, he was a boxer. He was a consummate boxer. That's why I think of Dingaan Thobela, I think of guys like, yeah, Sugar Ray Leonard. I think of, yeah, guys like Muhammad Ali. He was a consummate boxer. That guy would end you, and I think most definitely one of the most skillful boxers the world has ever produced. Yeah,
100%. And I was telling people exactly what you are saying, and saying, you know, had Dingaan Thobela been disciplined,
yeah,
you know, when you mix discipline and talent,
yeah,
then you're untouchable.
Yep.
Floyd Mayweather proved that. Sugar Ray Leonard proved that.
Yep.
They were talented, but they worked very, very hard.
Yeah.
The problem with Dingaan was just now was disciplined. He was not disciplined. He, yeah, didn't take his craft very, very seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did win some memorable fights.
Yeah.
He was the second. Listen to this. The only second. Boxer in South Africa to win a WBC title, right? And he did it when people had written him off.
Yeah,
everybody had said,
he's
gone, forget about this guy. And then he came and beat a guy called Ken Kettley,
yeah,
in 2000 and won the WBC super middleweight at title. He was an underdog. He came in, and the funny thing that now we had him on 702. We spoke to him. We were interviewing him, and he said to me, "I'm gonna win the title."
Yeah.
And we said to him, "Okay, it's fine. When you win it, the following day after you win it, you come here into the studio and come and talk to us." And he did exactly that. He won the title, and he came to the studio with his WBC belt. It was really, really incredible.
Oh, incredible guy! And he was just such a simple, down to earth, no airs about him kind of guy, and for me that's really a generation of guys that we've enjoyed, we've had the privilege of having in this country, that played at the highest level of whatever their craft is. I'm thinking about him. I'm thinking about Charlie Weir. I had the opportunity of greeting Charlie Weir many years. The Silver Assassin, man. I'm thinking about people like Arthur Maisel. I'm thinking about Tsipa Skosana. I'm thinking about all of those guys that were just down to earth, simple guys. You could sit. I mean, anybody could stand around with Dingaan and just have a conversation about almost anything. But of course, he loved to talk about boxing. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, and he was very, very charismatic, very handsome guy.
Yeah, right? I remember with the roses as well, with the ladies, yeah.
That, yes. Yeah, you push out roses
before the fight,
Before the fight, yeah. And yes, he did go out with our former Miss South Africa, Basisana Akademele. Then
they both came from Soweto around the same time, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was a very handsome guy, and yes, all the ladies really crazy about him, and yeah, you rightly point out, he would give out roses, and that's how he got the name the Rose of Soweto.
Yeah. I remember having a conversation with my uncle. He had beef with with Dingaan, because Dingaan was known as the Rose of Soweto. He says, yeah, no, he took that name from the Rose of Sharon, you know. he shouldn't do that. Only one person should have that title of the Rose of what. You know how boxers are. They'd have that conversation. It was wonderful. But let me ask you this, Prapeda. So is there any sense as to what could have been the cause of death at this stage?
No, I don't really.
Is foul play suspected at some level?
No, definitely. As I say, you know, we saw this thing coming for some years.
Yeah.
We could see now that Dingaan was not himself. He lost weight. If you remember correctly, in fact, before the end of his career, he had a problem with weight. In fact, he put on weight.
Yeah.
You know, and as a result, he couldn't fight in the divisions that he wanted to fight. And then he contemplated on moving to heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, to go to fighting as a heavyweight. So weight was not actually a problem. But now, as I said, we thought that, okay, it's stress because he owed the SARS a lot of money from his business, and his business went under. And yeah, he ended up now staying in a flat in all by himself in Mayfair, and all those things, you know, the pressure of all those things. You just suspect that, you know, they took a toll on him and he couldn't handle it, and then he just gave in. But definitely no foul play.
No foul play. Oh, but Peter, I'm so sad. I'm deeply saddened by this.
Look, he finishes his career now with 40 wins.
Yeah.
26 of those 40 wins he won by knockout,
yeah.
4 win defeats, and 2 draws. And unfortunately, he lost his last 7 fights. And that was his philosophy, by the way. You know, there's a philosophy like Floyd Mayweather,
yep.
Right? He's proud that, you know, he finishes his boxing career undefeated.
Yeah.
Dingaan was not one of those. He allowed himself, for instance, to be a stepping stone for younger up and coming boxers. For him, and I spoke to him about it, he said to me, look, as long as they're paying me. And if they're prepared to pay me, I'm willing to step into the ring, even if is to boost the career of an up and coming boxer. So yeah, his last 7 fights he lost. Of his 14 losses, 4 of them were by KO. And yeah, and he lost fights he was not supposed to lose, and he won fights he was not supposed to win. You know, that was the character of this man, at Dingaan, the Rose of Soweto, Tobela.
Bro, you and I need to still make some time so we can talk boxing, yeah? For a good hour, we need to talk about what's going on with this thing, Yabo, yeah. Mike Tyson, Libo. What's this guy, young man who's big? No, man, he's not even a real boxer, man. This one, who's going to fight with Tyson now in July? He's a Twitter, what? Social media, what do you think of this new development where legends are going back into the screen with some star of guys who have no real boxing pedigree? And I know I'm a bit of a purist. I accept that, but what is going on there? What's this thing?
I'm just like you, Praops. I'm a purist also. It's just bad. It's just
bad, terrible. Man.
I don't know why these people are doing this, but you know what? It's money. Money talks, and there are these promoters, especially in Saudi Arabia, they'll just throw money. Anthony Joshua right now fought a guy who's never been a boxer before.
He's
never
been a boxer. Man. And Francis Ngannou, what was that?
Exactly. I don't know what that was, and whether that goes into the record books because Francis Ngannou went the distance 8 rounds with WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury.
And that wasn't even the distance. Come on, it's eight rounds, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But listen to this. The WPC, right?
Yeah.
After that fight, rated Francis Ngannou at number 10. And there's a fight that he lost. And then suddenly now, this Ngannou now is a big shot now. And they throw money at this guy. In that fight, Ngannou made $20 million. $20 million. That's a lot of money, folks.
All right, let's leave that very, very quickly. Very, very quickly, bro, Peter. Garcia and Devaney. What's this?
Devin Haney.
What did you think of that fight?
Yeah, well, I had said before that Devin Haney is not a good boxer, but he's not an elite boxer. And my prediction was proved right.
I got that completely wrong. I had Garcia down on his back in the third round. But weren't there any issues around the weight and so forth?
Yes, Garcia fooled everybody. He fooled everybody. He knew that he was not going to make the weight, and then he pretended like he's crazy. He's not well in his head, and people said, "Nah, he's having a mental breakdown, and he's not going to finish the fight." But he went in there. He was slightly heavier, heavier than his opponent. Yeah, and he knocked out Devin Haney he almost knocked him out. But yeah, he won on points. Now he's on top of the world, but he's not a world champion.
Yeah.
Because now he will make the weight.
And I'm seeing all of these little concessions. People are allowed to fight in the wrong weight, and then they're not the world champions. It just feels like chaos in the boxing space. I want you to join us at some point because a lady called in to say, listen, we need to talk about boxing in South Africa and boxing administration. It looks like it's a sad story in South African boxing. We need to sit around and have that conversation, Brapira. I'm going to ask Ntating now to make a date with you so that we can have that conversation. Final question, Mebru. Final question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tank Davis, right? Javante Tank Davis. Who should be fighting Javante now?
Javante, he can fight Lomachenko because that's
Lomachenko! Lomachenko! That's my boy. Yeah. Lomachenko is my man. Yes.
Because the rest of them, including Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, Teofimo Lopez, they've all moved up to junior welter and welter. So so the guys that are still in the lightweight division is Tank. But that Tank man, Jovana Davis, he's something else.
He's something else. But I agree with you. A fight between Tank and Lomachenko. That would be something else, my brother. That would be because I feel like Lomachenko has not been given the respect that he deserves. Yeah. I mean, that guy is in a class of his own completely, and I'm worried that his time is starting to disappear. And he needs to fight a fighter that's worthy of his class. I think Tank Davis is probably the one guy that I think Lomachenko. No, I at least I feel a little bit better now that you mentioned Lomachenko. But Peter, so you'll come and we'll have a chat. Yeah.
100%. I'm looking forward to it.
Peter Liupeng, thank you so much for joining us. Boxing analyst and aficionado talking about the passing of the great Dingaan, the Rose of Soweto, Thobela. Very, very sad moment indeed.